Hey, you guys, Lauren here. It has been a minute since we've recorded a new episode, so I wanted to leave a little surprise for everyone going back re-listening, or maybe you're listening for the first time. If you are interested in our graphic design contract template, you can use the code LOYALLISTENER for 50% off, making it $37.50. This is an awesome, thorough contract I made in collaboration with my lawyer, Kirsty Locke Miller. If you are insecure about your current contract, or maybe you don't have a contract, I would definitely recommend this one. You can find the link at our show notes and use the code LOYALLISTENER. Thanks for your support.
Hey, I'm Lauren.
I'm Steph, and this is Design Beat.
Hello, and welcome to Design Beat, where we share the stories of creative women who dance to the beat of their own drum. We hope you come away uplifted, inspired, and encouraged to go for it. You guys, how are you doing? I'm taking a break from Instagram this week, so I'm feeling very out of the loop. I am logging on my desktop every once in a while to gather things for the podcast and look things up. But for the most part, I'm taking a break, and honestly, it feels really good. I am excited to get back on, though. I do feel a little disconnected. So if you've been sharing about the podcast, thank you. Thank you so much. We always love to see those screenshots. Anytime somebody tags us, just makes my whole entire day. Reviews make my whole entire day. Today we're talking with Jasmine Designs. Jazz, as I like to call her. Jazz is the six-figure design superwoman turned pricing queen. She is speaking with us from Australia, which is fun. Our first guest from Australia. Just wait till you hear how long Australian maternity leave is, you guys. My mind is blown, and I'm probably going to move there. Not because I need maternity leave, but because they probably have really happy moms there. Okay, Jazz is a creative teaching pricing through courses, resources. She is passionate about pricing, pie puns. Wait till you hear how many pie puns she packed into this interview. She's all about helping transform her students from starving artists into hungry creatives, which we love and appreciate around here. Jazz was a blast to talk with. Before we get into our interview, I wanted to remind you our design contract template is 50% off the entire month of November with the code Black Friday. You can find that at designbeatpodcast.com/contract. Just a couple more weeks and I'll stop talking about that so much. But I really hope everybody who would like to gets the chance to take advantage of that awesome discount. All right, here is Jazz. Jasmine!
Hey!
Thank you for talking with me this evening, midday tomorrow for you.
I'm living in the future.
Yes.
Hello from the future. It's still the same.
But different.
Yeah,
in sure. Australia.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Like, I hope
completely wrong. I'm in Iceland. No, Aussie. Australian in Melbourne. Melbourne, Australia.
Cool. Our first guest from Australia.
Oh, pioneer. How cool.
Yes. Hopefully not the last.
Oh, definitely not.
Liking this already.
Yeah. There's theories that Australia and Aussies in general, it's all just a myth, that it's not real. But, you know, we're here. We're real. I promise.
She is real. I'm not sure she's actually in Australia, but I'm going to trust her. She's real. Okay, so you've listened to the podcast. You know we start out with rapid fire questions.
Yes.
Right?
Look, I did listen actually about this time yesterday, and I was like, oh, what am I going to say? What am I going to answer? What am I going to say?
It's great. You're going to do great.
Thanks.
Okay. First question. What snacks are you loving right now?
Look, if I said I snacked on coffee, would you believe me?
You wouldn't be the first.
No, that's fair. That's fair. So one of my all-time favorite snacks is sliced mango with vanilla yogurt, vanilla bean yogurt.
Mm.
So anyone who has seen any of my stories on Instagram will know that I have an AD, which is an assistant dachshund. So at about 3:30, I go, okay, snack time. And he's like, yes, I get a small bite of whatever she's eating. So we will generally aww, snack on fruit so that I can share it with him.
Oh, I love mangoes.
Mm-hmm.
So refreshing.
Yeah.
I didn't
try mangoes until like 4 years ago. So, and I'm 32. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Now you know what you've been missing out on.
I do. I'm so good. Livid at my past self, but that's okay.
My brother, who is 31, 30? Oh, crap. I think he's 30. No, he's 31. Okay. Anyway, he's never had a grape.
Is he okay? Does he need help?
I know. He said he stepped on a mashed grape at someone's house when he was little, and it just ruined it for him.
So he has grape PTSD. GPTSD.
So now he's made it a point. Like it's what makes him unique that he's never had a grape.
But how does he feel about wine? Because that's really important.
I don't think he's a wine drinker.
Like, I feel like that's the equivalent of I once had a bad interaction with a cow and now I don't drink milk. Like,
yeah. I want to, like, sneak him a grape one of these days. Or, like, a chicken salad with grapes.
That's so good. Not really a thing here.
Really? As I was saying, I was like, they probably don't have that here. That feels very American.
Yeah, you guys have some interesting foodstuffs. I will. But then again, so do we.
Salads.
Come here, have our selection of salads. We thought that we'd do a fruit and a vegetable, and then we just put them together. Like just
yeah,
yep. Toss it all.
That's pretty much it.
Yeah,
pretty much it. Okay, next question.
This is so rapid. I'm barely keeping up.
I don't know why we call it rapid. They always answer rapidly, and then I'm like, tell me more. Why?
That's a great opinion. Please dissect it.
Really got to change that, babe. Okay. What shows are you loving right now?
So because I am wonderfully riddled with anxiety, I like to rewatch shows at least 6 to 10 times before I really start to enjoy them. I'm on my 6th or 7th run through of Arrested Development, and I don't know if you guys are a fan of Arrested Development, but the best way that someone described Arrested Development to me was they tell you the punchline 2 episodes before they tell you the joke.
Oh.
Yeah. And yeah. So, like, for instance, spoiler alert, when Buster loses his hand, he gets a claw. 3 episodes before that, he has a skill tester that he gets a seal toy out of this skill tester machine. But when he has his hand taken off, it's taken off by a seal and it gets replaced with a claw. So it's just like these beautiful moments of like, amazing, this is kind of cool. Arrested Development at the moment is my rewatch, but also slowly clawing my way through. And this is it started as a pandemic guilty pleasure, but I have almost watched every single season and every single episode of Survivor.
I'm like watching it tonight.
42 seasons.
Every we started during the pandemic too.
Mm-hmm.
We've skipped around, but
oh yeah, definitely.
After we watched 40, we couldn't go back and watch the others because we knew all the winners.
Yeah, but we had some watched that are quite in there a few. That it's like,
I know, we gotta go. We got it. So I told my husband it's on in 45 minutes. I was like, I will be done. First Survivor, we need to because we watch it live. So my family's waiting for me to start right at 7.
We have joked and toyed with the idea, so we're getting married my partner and I in April.
And congratulations. We're asking,
thank you. It'll be on our 10-year anniversary. He's also my Aww. Primary school crush from when I was 8 years old. So, and we're getting married by our primary school teacher, which is pretty
no
damn
way.
Cool. Yeah. But we're actually That's thinking of asking cutest. Her instead of like the, if anyone objects, we just want to be like, if anyone has a hidden immunity idol, now would be the time to play it. It'd just be like this moment where it's literally that. For no one else. Like the joke is for no one else but ourselves. And if you get it,
I
great,
love that
cool.
So much. Oh my gosh. Oh, last year for Halloween, my husband was Jeff and I was Ozzy. My hair was longer, so it looked like Ozzy's. It was the best Halloween costume because we have this party every year and we just talked Survivor all night with people.
Look.
It was so fun. It was a great conversation starter.
Yeah, definitely. And do you know what is even a, like, just as good conversation starter is in a small group of friends, and we did this the other week and it was like simultaneously fantastic and a complete disaster. It's like, so how quickly do you think that such and such would be voted out? Because it really shows like, oh, that's where I am on the pecking order. Cool. Like, yes, everyone thinks that they'll win, but then everyone is also like, yeah, you wouldn't make it to merge. And you just get so offended.
Oh, like, I know. I know. We've had this conversation with our friends and I'm still holding a grudge. I'm like, listen, I wouldn't be great in challenges, but
no,
I play
neither.
A social game.
Yeah, I would play a really great social game. I would be definitely in a idol hunter, but I would be on par with Sandra in taking on challenges, being just like, you know what, I'm going to sit out this one. I'm going to sit out this one.
Yeah.
And I also don't like I'm not someone that if you go to the beach, I'll just jump in the water. Like, you know, I dip my toe in.
Oh.
And so, you know, you can't do that when you're starting a challenge. Or sand. Ugh.
Mm. Yeah.
So what we're saying is I'm not going on Survivor at all. Like, not even, not in a little bit.
I'm trying to get my husband to apply. He'd be so good.
I've applied for Making It. That's much more my speed.
Yeah. Oh, yes. That would be so fun.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I hope you get on that. That would be so fun to watch you. Okay, one more
rapid fire.
What should I call it? Let's come up with a new name right now.
I mean, I feel like it's going to end up being like a Julie Andrews getting to know you.
Getting to know you question. I don't know. We'll have to think on this a little bit.
Offbeat answers.
Offbeat answers. I like it. Okay, last one. When are you most productive?
In the dying hours of the day.
Really?
Yeah, I was listening yesterday, you guys were like, oh, first thing in the morning I like slow down by 3, and I'm like, 3? I get pumped. That's
really?
That's rev the engines. I get more done sitting on the couch between like 9 p.m. and 10:30, 11 o'clock when my partner's like, can you come to bed now?
Oh my goodness.
And I'm just like,
I am
no
dead.
I just got a breakthrough. I've just cracked a code, or I've done something. But I also am not a morning person whatsoever. So
yeah,
a lot of the mornings, like, so Rohan, my partner, will get up and he will go for a walk at 7 o'clock in the morning and come home and start work at 8, and when he's about half an hour into the day, he will boil the kettle so that we can have coffee. And that's when myself and the dog wake up.
Halfway through the day?
Oh, 8:30. Half an hour into the day. But then,
I thought you said halfway
through
the day.
So like, you know, 5, 6 o'clock at night. Yeah, let's go. I'm ready. Yeah,
that's
most
awesome.
Productive at the last sentence. I am highly motivated by a deadline. Like, if I want to get something done, if I give myself a deadline, I'll make it. But if I give myself, like, oh, you've got all day to do this, it will not get done. I'm very good at procrastinating.
My husband makes fun of me because when working with clients, I like to give things to them as fast as possible. And so I'll like work ahead and I'll like send them something and then they're like,
there's more now, there's now more time for you to like fulfill. Yeah.
Yeah, like I'll send it to them and I'll be like, come on, give me feedback. Come on. Something else. I'm like too fast. And then they'll be like, actually, we wanted to do it this way, but you didn't give us time to tell you. Anyway.
Oh, that's frustrating. I've actually got two hacks for that one. So one, on Gmail, you can do a schedule send. So if do something, schedule send it for at least, like if you do something too fast, like you solve a problem really quickly, schedule send it for an hour after you've done it, because it means that just in case. And also you've given it a little bit more expectation and time. Like you're not sitting there going, oh no, I can do everything really, really quickly. Even though you can, that's totally fine. Right. And two, when you ask for feedback, give them deadlines. So like to be able to ensure that we're going to be on track for the next phase of this process, I would like to request that you provide your feedback by this time and this date. And like, if you can control the narrative, like IKEA store, they do the arrows all the way through the store. If you can control where you want your client to go and what they want them, you want them to do, rather than being like, go in this direction. It's a really, really good hack of like, this is what I expect of you, client, so that I can work to my best, so that I can provide you with my best.
Yeah, because how are they supposed to know what you're expecting from them unless you tell them, right?
Yeah, exactly. I think when we were sitting around the dinner table the other night, it was something along the lines of people won't respect your boundaries if they don't know what they are.
I love that.
Yeah. And same with expectations. People won't respect your expectations unless they know what they are. Like they can't just guess.
Yeah.
And they probably guess wrong too.
Totally. Yeah. That's so good. You have to communicate with them what you're expecting if you, and then, yeah, you have that control and have those boundaries set. That's so good. Okay. Jasmine or Jazz?
Either works. I answer to both.
Jazz.
Love it. Just to clarify, one singular Z, not two. I'm not a genre. I'm an individual.
Jazz. Love it. Okay, so do you want to give us a little background on you, your career? 14 years designing, right?
Yeah, a little bit of a stretch, most definitely. So I like to think and believe that I was born with two really pivotal things and really strong things in my life, a sense of imagination and a gift of the gab. And that was really complemented by probably holding a colored pencil as soon as I was born, just being like, yeah, let's do this. So I've always been a really creative person. Parents, mum is a very creative person. Dad's a business owner. And so a lot of my childhood was filled with, how can we be creative today? How can we create something new that didn't exist yesterday? Which is a really awesome childhood to have had. And then through, as I kind of grew up and went into my teens and went through high school, I really blossomed when it was kind of anything creative, but anything that problem solved, which really beautifully lent itself to the design path and the graphic design path. Then when I got into TAFE, I learnt most from the teachers that were either in the industry or that framed things in a way that I could understand them. And one of those things was, if you're going to create something, go to the end of the job so you can work out what hurdles you're going to be coming across. And so a lot of the start of my career was being in those end positions. So I worked as a sign writer for quite a few years, in a print room operator capacity and running massive printing presses. I also then worked in a lot of like basically everything that was end of the job. I wanted to understand what was there so that then I could work my way back through that. I worked in different places like real estate, marketing, aged care and retirement living, hospitality, advertising, commercial advertising as well. So there's a lot of different, basically I wanted to get the full buffet experience. I wanted to try every single dish on the menu so I could work out what I liked and what I didn't.
Yeah. And were you always designing in these industries?
Okay. Yeah. So my first job actually was a butcher. Working as a butcher, because I come from a family of butchers. So my dad is a butcher, owns butcher shops across Adelaide. And I, from the age of 18 to the age of 22, worked in those butcher shops. That's where I learnt my business mind. That's where I learnt my sense of business. And that's where my dad taught me, like, kind of the core thing of me is, you need to be big enough to serve someone, but small enough to know them. It's those relationships and those connections that are so important, no matter what you do. And so then going through like the early days of my design career, being in Adelaide. Now, for those of your listeners who don't know what Adelaide is, Adelaide is a small sleepy town in the center bottom of Australia, in South Australia. It's quite well known for, it's a little bit of a joke and it's a little bit of a dig and it's a little bit of a truth. It's quite sleepy. It's quite small. Everyone knows everyone. It's very much who you know rather than what you know. As well as there's not as much opportunity for growth that I wanted personally. And so part of the creative side and experimenting and looking and searching for those different creative sides and creative outlets meant that I also then kind of took a hard left turn and tried another avenue of creativity. So I moved to Melbourne on a musical theatre pathway. So I performed in musical theatre as like a hobby and then got accepted into a musical theatre school in Melbourne, picked up my life and my partner, and we moved to Melbourne. After a year of that, run back into the loving arms of graphic design because it was hell and I did not enjoy it. But I tried it. I tasted it, realised that I had a really strong allergic reaction.
So what exactly did you do? Musical theater wise,
perform, sing, act, dance,
like plays,
musical theater plays. So I was in Joseph and his Technicolor Dreamcoat, Les Mis. We did a lot of like performing art stuff, and performing in musicals. So yeah, that was for
a year. So this was like your full-time job?
No, so it was study. And then it was amateur theatre. So I was doing all amateur theatre stuff and performing, but it was a pathway that I was exploring and trying out something different.
So had you been working as a designer before and then you switched? So how long had you been working as a designer when you switched to musical theatre?
5 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you thought, maybe I want to do musical theatre.
Well, the funny thing was that the catalyst for moving and for doing that and auditioning and trying was, I don't know about you, but I'm sure that there's at least one listener out there that has been in a studio environment or in a job that they hated that it just wasn't the right fit for them. And for me, it was a design studio that I was in for all of 3 weeks, and it was frustrating because I was even getting from the art director after the first week, oh, no, you don't need to push yourself. You don't need to be pushing your creativity. This is where designers come when they're sick of being creative and they just want to do the work and go home. And I'm here to tell you right now that that is not the way the creative industry works at all. It's not how creativity as a career works. It was just the place I was in. And at that point in time, I was like, well, this must be what it's like. This must be what it's like to be a designer that is at a certain stage in their career and has gone, oh yeah, this is enough. And that infuriated me because I was like, how have I worked so hard becoming a designer, becoming a creative, study all of that for so long for this to be where I end up? It must be the industry. I must have to try something else. And it was also coupled with a, well, what if? What if I did? What if I tried? what if I didn't try musical theatre and I didn't try auditioning for a school and performing, what would I feel like I missed out on? And so it was, yeah, it was very much a case of, okay, try this. And even if it just means that it's transferred you from one place to another, then that's fine. And I also kind of learned a lot about when it comes to these different outlets and these different opportunities, there's not much difference between performing or fulfilling a brief for a client and auditioning in front of a panel. The audition panel want you to do well. They want you to succeed. And they want you to actually fulfill whatever brief they've got in front of them for a particular character. And the same goes for a working with a client who has a particular idea for what they want their finished product to be. So it's about understanding, playing to your audience, understanding what the expectation is, making sure that you're right for the role or right for the brief, and then fulfilling it and doing well. So I spent a long time kind of mourning that career path attempt. And, you know, I think that we've all had those kind of moments where we've tried something new and it didn't work out. And you right. mourn the process, but you also need to understand that it's like, well, that was the process. That was the next step. And now we go to the next one. And what did you learn from it? What did you grow from it? How did it process through into the next version of you?
Mm-hmm. That's why we call it trying new things.
Yeah. It's not saying it's succeeding at new things. It's trying them.
Right. Okay. So I interrupted you.
I ran into the loving arms back into design, I tried lots of different studios, and there's a place called Officeworks here, but it'd be equivalent to Staples. So I did some graphic design for them. I worked for a couple of different studios. My last studio that I worked for full time, I left after 6 months because they didn't value me. And that was probably one of the first times that I sat there and went, okay, time to put your big girl pants on, time to start valuing yourself so that others do too, which is always an interesting process to go through and to be in. And then my last part-time gig, because I actually had a transition year where I took on a 3-day-a-week part-time role so that I could be building my business on the side on those other days that I wasn't working. So for a year, I worked as a graphic designer for Rolex Australia and handled all of the advertising. And it was a churn, pump out, 150 ads a month, like just get it done, get it out, get it, like have attention to detail.
Speed.
Yeah. But it made it so that I was really efficient at understanding what are the things that I need to tick off the list? How do I need to kind of work my processes? And it developed a process-driven understanding of how to do my job.
Jobs like that are so hard, but so good for you.
Oh, yeah. It builds a muscle. And that muscle is never going to diminish. It's never going to just kind of shrivel up and die. You're going to have that muscle for a really long time if you are put under that pressure, kind of like creating diamonds sort of approach, I guess. And so by the time I finished that year, I was full-time freelance, jumped straight into it and was like, okay,
so it took you a year to transition from part-time to full-time freelance?
Yeah, so that was only a maternity leave cover job, so they had me there for the year that the other person couldn't do it. And then they came back and took their job back, and I was out in the world.
They had maternity leave for a year?
Yeah, welcome. Welcome to Australia.
Is that normal?
Yeah.
Oh, that's
There's maternity leave. You can do a year, and you can extend it, but it has to be in a different situation. So you can do it to a 2-year length. And then there's also paternity leave as well. So the dads get time off too.
I love that so much. I'm moving there. That's it.
Look, if you love a lockdown, we've had about 7 of them.
I don't love lockdown.
But yeah, so when I jumped back in, or jumped into full-time freelance, by that point in time, for that first year or two, I was working on the idea of ramen profitability. So what do I need to make ends meet, and not I need to make the exact amount that I was making before when I was fully employed and had all these benefits and all that sort of stuff. And it was a process of going, okay, what do I do? What do I do well? What can I do? And what do I like doing? And just kind of mushing that all into this kind of dough, putting it in the oven and baking it and hoping for the best. And so, that's basically been the last 5-6 years has been, what can I do well? Where can I find clients who need what I can do well? And serving that up on a silver platter so they can't say no. Ba-da-da!
Easy as pie.
Yeah, totally. Well,
well, maybe that's not easy as pie. I'm not as good at the baking metaphors as you are.
Look, when you've been doing this sort of like, oh, they really do. The baking food metaphors.
I tried one and it didn't work.
We've got time. We've still got time. We're only 20 minutes in. It's not easy pie.
I'm going to stop. Easy
as pie is actually my hand-baked, hand-created passion project that has turned into more that has been my last year. So that's pretty much the takes us to now.
So let's talk about that. So after designing for 14 years,
yep,
you decided to start teaching pricing.
Yeah, so I feel like, just like I said with the teachers that I learned best from were in the industry and doing what they're doing, I felt like I had needed to be doing the same thing as well. So because I've tried so many different things, because I've had so many different experiences with different clients, and I've had to fire clients, and I've had to negotiate my worth, and I've had to reassess in every single part of the design process if I'm enjoying it, is it good for me, am I happy, all of those different processes, and then also understanding pricing on a really deep level and taking the time to really research it for myself for the last 3 years, I was like, okay, well, why didn't I know this 5 years ago? Why wasn't I... This is the stuff I wish I would have known when I first started out. So the easiest pie pricing is the bake child of my last 14 years being in the industry and going, what works, what doesn't, what's worked for me, what hasn't worked for me, and how can I teach the person that I was 5 years ago all of the things that I know now, not so that I don't make the mistakes, but so I'm aware of what things can and potentially could, should, will go wrong, and how to safeguard that with a little bit of financial confidence, a little bit of pricing strategy, without having to be like sleazy sales gross, and still making it so that it's digestible for people and understandable for people to apply to their own businesses. And so Easy as Pie Pricing is a online course that is going to be incredible. We've had the first round and the second round's coming up early next year, but it's all about helping creatives, designers, and freelancers bake profit into their creative crust, and charge dough for what they do well.
I love that. So when you sign up for the course, walk us through what to expect.
Sure. So I'm calling it the easiest prior pricing degustation. It is a 12-week, 12-dish course where it is we will break down and dissect pricing in different ways, shapes and forms each week. So every Monday you will get served up to you a different topic that we'll be deep diving in. So we're talking hourly pricing, project pricing, value-based pricing, licensing, how your positioning affects your price, how to serve up and sell without being sleazy, how to negotiate when there isn't enough to be feeding everyone? What is the importance of after sales? What is the importance of contracts and how to look after yourself and protect yourself for when things can and do go wrong? And so it is 12 weeks jam-packed into these videos that you get to watch or listen to each Monday. And then every single week, we will break down that project or that topic on a live coaching call. So you get live access to me every single week and we talk about that particular topic. So say, for instance, in week six, we have positioning your pie. So how does your positioning affect your price? And how can we work in a way that we're serving the best version of ourselves in our positioning? We're not trying to sell caviar to someone who wants toast. We're not trying to get more money where money is potentially not available or an industry that's not available to it. And so you'd get your video and your information at the start of the week. On Wednesday, we have a live call and we talk about this project. There's worksheets that we work through. You're able to ask as many questions as you like on the call. And then we've also got some guest expert teachers. One will be talking about money mindset, one will be talking about licensing, and one will be talking about contracts. And the great thing about this is that I know quite a bit about these different topics, but it's also really relevant to ask because community is so important. Like, I'm sure that you definitely agree with that one, having a podcast. Is that totally. Community and connection is so important. And when we don't know the answers to the questions, it's really important to ask our community.
Yes, that is so valuable. And I love how, I know when I have a question on pricing, or especially when I was starting out, I was trying to figure out how to price myself. I was looking for specifics. Anytime somebody would tell me exactly what they were charging, I would just cling to that. And I just ate it up because I just wanted to find out what they were charging and charge exactly what they were charging. Or if they had more experience, maybe just charge a little less. But I love how instead of just saying, this is exactly how much you should be charging, you're giving the tools to figure it out themselves. Because there's so many factors. There's the value that it is to the client, there's your experience, there's how much you need to be making for the project, the timeline, so many different factors. And I love that you're just providing them with the tools to learn and figure it out themselves. And you have a calculator, right?
Yes,
I do. Factor in everything specific to them. So tell us about the calculator.
Yeah, so Easiest Pie Pricing Calculator is all about working out what ingredients are in your own pricing recipe. So it's really about, a lot of people have gone, oh, well, this doesn't apply to where I live. Well, you're starting with numbers. It's literally just the recipe. Like, you literally put in the numbers that apply to you, and it doesn't matter what currency it's in. It's literally the numbers that apply to you. So say, for instance, if you were to jump on there now, you would start with your salary. So you start with the dollar amount that you want to be taking home at the end of the year. So you would pop that in. Then you start going through your expenses, sprinkle them in, dash them in as much or as little as is important and particular to you. Because realistically, if you've got two designers and one's got studio hire and one works from home, they shouldn't be charging the same because they have the one with studio hire has higher expenses. Therefore, that needs to be reflected in what they need to make to cover their expenses. And it's not fair that someone who has decided that they want to have a studio so that they can be giving a better service should then be getting less as a profit. So you would sprinkle in your expenses. You would then divide by the billable hours in a year. So as much as we like to find as many hours in the day, especially myself being a night owl, just trying to find as many hours in the day, we can't bill for every single hour. So what you'd be able to do within the calculator is go, okay, well, if I only want to work 4 hours a week, or 4 hours 4 days a week. I'll put 4 days a week. If I only want to work 6 hours a day, I'll put 6 hours a day. And it calculates that based on how many hours are then generated from a calendar year. And then it says, okay, here's your salary plus your expenses divided by your billable hours. This is how much you should be charging per hour to be able to be making that. Now, I don't really... There is some situations that call for hourly pricing. They are very small. There is a small amount of hourly pricing situations. To me, it's kind of like inviting a whole heap of people over for a pizza party, but not knowing how many people are going to arrive. And so you just get as many pizzas as possible so you can feed as many people as possible. And so right. That's the kind of idea that you're like, you know, you need to get more hours to be able to feed more. But hourly pricing, it ends up making you feel like you're rushed. It penalizes you for being efficient. It means that you're capped at the amount of earnings that you can do in a day. And also... you're going to sit there and go, oh, but I didn't really work this whole hour, so I'm not going to charge them the whole hour. Or, oh, I was doing paperwork, so I probably shouldn't include that in what I'm charging them because that's not fair. So The pricing calculator helps you work out the value, the dollar value of your time. But that's the start of the recipe. That's the start of the building blocks that you then would take into project pricing or value-based pricing or licensing or whatever pricing strategy or setup works for your business and the way that you work.
So it gives you a foundation to work from, right?
Yeah.
Or like a baseline. Like, this is what my time is worth.
Yeah.
And you can work from there based on the value to the client and everything else.
Yeah, and all the other extra necessary elements that make up what you're providing for them. And realistically, a lot of people have said, "Oh, I just price on a gut feeling," or I price on what other people are charging. If you're pricing on a gut feeling, you're going to go hungry. You're going to have an empty stomach because it's you're going to probably price yourself lower than you're actually worth. And there's nothing worse than getting towards the end of the week and going, oh, I didn't make enough to pay my bills, or I didn't make enough to cover what my expenses were because I didn't run my numbers. And also, if you're pricing on what other people are charging, is your situation exactly the same? Are you pricing to cover your mortgage, or are you renting? Are you pricing so that your expenses are exactly the same as theirs? Because if you priced based on someone else that has less expenses and therefore charges less, and now you can't pay your bills, like that's horrible. Mm-hmm. We're in this for business. It's a business. Like, businesses are run for profit. That's just the long and short of it. And so if your creative business isn't making a profit, you're actually got a really expensive hobby. And I don't know about you, but I've got enough expensive hobbies. Like, I got into cross stitch for like a hot minute, and that was expensive.
Yeah, and I think a lot of creatives run into the problem where they enjoy what they do for a living
and then feel guilty about it.
Yes, and then feel guilty or even feel guilty spending their time on fun projects that aren't making money. On the other hand, like, oh, if I'm ever designing, I need to make sure it's marketing materials or something that's directly going to lead to sales and make a profit. But yeah, it's hard to find that balance.
Yeah, you don't need to monetize every single hobby. But if you can try something new, leave space for play, but then find out, okay, well, what part of this can I not completely ruin by monetizing? And convert that. So if it's illustration, can you find something that... like one part of illustration you can find that is actually going to make money, but then still, like, have that space for play, have that space for enjoyment.
Yes, I love that. And I need to to hear that today.
Do not feel guilty for enjoying your creativity. There is people out there who get buzzy on spreadsheets, and that's their play. I'm going to tell you right now, they probably don't go home on the weekend and be like, you know what? I'm going to Excel this. I'm going to have like, I'm going to go off chops. It's going to be amazing. But you know, we get to play and be creative, but it doesn't mean we should be penalized because we enjoy what we do. Sorry. I'd actually like to enjoy what I do.
Right. That's a goal of mine. Moving forward, I've been thinking about this today, actually, is to set a timer for 10 minutes just for a creative practice, do a challenge or something just for 10 minutes just to play, just to warm up and enjoy it. Because that's why I started doing this in the first place, because I loved it. And I don't want to ruin, like you said, can't ruin every part of it with trying to monetize all our time.
We're really good at that.
Being creative.
And I was probably a lot more harder on myself in past years. Not so much now, because I'm well and truly into my early 30s now. And so do we have a profanity warning? I give less.
I can make it explicit if I need to.
I give less shits. I give less of a shit about feeling like, I used to say, I don't want to piss off future Jazz because I took time for myself. I don't want to put future Jazz in a position where she's like, oh, screw her. She was so selfish by taking time or resting or doing nothing. I'm telling you right now, we definitely sit there and go like these different versions of ourselves that live in future or past. They don't care about each other. Like they think they do, but they don't. And so giving yourself time to play, to relax, to disassociate by scrolling, there's nothing wrong with it. Like, you know, do it in small amounts and understand that it's serving a certain purpose. But once it's served its purpose and you've relaxed or you've done what you need to do, switch to something else. Like, and we can get lost in those scroll holes quite easily. And, especially when it comes to finding inspiration, like just one more tutorial, just one more class, just one more quote, just one more. And so don't get so caught up finding inspiration that you forget to take action.
Right.
It's very common. We're really good at it.
Yes. And we call it research.
Yep.
And I just need, before I get started, just need
I need to master it in my brain.
And know exactly what I'm going to do before I start, rather than figuring it out as we go.
My dad doesn't like going to the like shopping center or retail outlets with my mum, because whenever they go, my dad says to her, what shops do you want to go in and what do you want to buy? And it's like, how can I plan for that? And so it's like you can't experience what's on the rack until you actually pick it up and go, ah, I'm here. I can try this. And you've tried it on now and it looks like you look like a jellyfish because you tried a massive dress on that didn't actually fit. But you need to actually sometimes try and fail to learn the lesson faster than if you read it 17 times.
Oh, try and fail. I love that.
Fail forward, though, not backwards.
Right. Just fail quickly.
Oh, fail fast, because it gets it out of the way. You've learned it. You've done it. Let's go.
And move on.
Move on is like a really strong part. Like, just do it. Just move on. Don't hold on to it.
Focus on the failure.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that. Okay, we're about out of time. Survivor starts in 4 minutes. I gotta get down there. But before we wrap up, is there anything else you want to share, plug? Where can we find you? Where can we get more Jazz?
Well, if you're into pricing, puns, and creativity, head over to JH Designs on Instagram. That is me. If you love a good teal, you'll fit right in. A lot of people say they've got a favorite color. My blood runs teal. My whole soul is full of teal. It's pretty intense over there. But yes, JH Designs is where to find me. Otherwise, I have Jasmine Designs, which is my design superwoman side, and Pricing Queen, which is my pricing and easy as pie side, which is easyaspiepricing.com. And then if you want to access the calculator again, it's easyaspiepricing.com/calculate.
Amazing. Thank you so much. This was so fun.
I actually do feel like if we hadn't had Survivor, we would have gone 2 hours.
Let's do it again.
And that's happened before. That's happened before. Actually, I'm going to make this official right on here. Lauren, hey, do you want to do like I do a weekly segment called Slice of Advice where I talk to creatives. You want to be on Slice of Advice?
Yes. I would be honored.
Awesome. Well, people on the podcast, watch out for Lauren on Slice of Advice coming to a brand near you.
I can't wait. Yay.
Awesome. So go and use your hidden immunity idol. Talk to you soon.
All right. For all things Design Beat, you can follow us on Instagram at Design Beat Podcast or visit us on our website at designbeatpodcast.com. We'll catch you next week.